What's up, everybody? Welcome to another live episode of the Modern Lending Podcast. We're going to go down a rabbit hole today. With me is my man, James Robert Lay. Now, James is the CEO of the Digital Growth Institute. He also is the best-selling author now of Banking on Digital Growth. And met this guy on the internet, as you do. And man, there's just tons of alignment that him and I have in our messaging and what we believe in stepping into. I cannot wait to get a copy of his book. I ordered it already. And this guy is teaching banks and credit unions how to go digital. Man, what an alignment. Let's open it up. Let's bring James on the show and rock and roll. What's up, James, Robert? How you doing, buddy?
Doing well, Alec. It's good to see you, man.
I love that I had to figure out that you were the man with two first names. I'm glad we cleared that up before we got on the show here, so yes, I didn't get reprimanded midway through. So, James Robert, congratulations, first of all. Best-selling author, recently published, Banking on Digital Growth. I mean, that's a huge accomplishment. I think you said it was four categories that you got, that you're five. Dude, congratulations.
Thanks, man.
So, as I said kind of in the intro, guys, I bumped into James Robert on the internet and realized right away that this guy was speaking my language and that there's probably a lot of things that he's doing that I can learn from. So, James, before we get into the questions and we get down the rabbit hole, give everybody a little bit about your background, please.
So, my last real job was waiting tables and playing a punk rock band.
So epic.
That was the life. And there was this girl, I was a sophomore in college, and she said, you know what? Your band is not so good. You actually kind of suck. Do something with your life. And so I started this little web design company, which became grew into the Digital Growth Institute over the last 18 years. Actually ended up marrying that girl. And now we have four kids. And along the way, we've helped over 520 financial brands simplify their digital marketing and sales strategies to grow from good to great and really generate 10 times more loans and deposits.
And by the way, what a better time than now? I mean, I think there's a reason your book flying off the shelf. Everyone's going, we don't have customers anymore the traditional way. How do we get to them?
You know, it's crazy because I started writing that book in May of 2019, and the world was a very different place. It's like,
no kidding.
It's like what a century this month has been. It's not even. I used to say what a decade this month is. No, it's like what a. It'll soon be a millennium, but just the amount of change we've experienced at the macro level, at the organizational level, at the micro level with ourselves, it's a lot for anyone to process and to try to comprehend. And I think we need to have a lot of empathy for ourselves, for our teams, for our organizations, for the people that we're looking to help right now, because we are really in a completely different time period.
Yeah, and we're forced into it. So it's kind of like we gotta go, we don't have a choice. And by the way, we're live on LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook. Hi Mary on LinkedIn, Chris, what's up on Facebook? Well, thanks you guys for joining us and hanging out today. Always good to see you, Mary. So James, let's talk about this for a second. When you talk to credit unions, banks, these mega institutions about going digital, what does digital growth mean? What does that mean? Break it down in like layman's terms.
Well, let's talk about the internal perception first, and that's typically where the problem stems. And internally, digital growth from the executive level is viewed as, you know, we have online banking, we have mobile banking, we have these online applications, we're digital. And I'm like, you've got the service side of the business locked down.
Yeah.
You don't have the growth or the acquisition. So we have to actually go in and redefine or academically define what is digital growth. And simplified, digital growth is systems and processes that are centered around the modern consumer journey to attract, to nurture, and ultimately convert leads for loans and deposits. And that, just that definition alone, if you can get that buy-in throughout, that's a light bulb.
Well, and by the way, I love it so much because if you're a loan consultant out there trying to grow your business and looking at what does digital growth mean for me, it's the same definition, guys. It's the same definition. So once you get somebody to understand that definition, James Robert, what's next?
Well, once we get that, it's okay, great. We have that alignment. Now let's actually define what is our purpose. Like, why do we exist as an organization? So why do we exist as a team? Why do I exist as an individual? Because once again, we have to reshape and reframe the conversation that we have with ourselves, with our teams, with our organizations. Because a lot of times, you know, we exist to push loans.
Yeah. Yeah. We exist to sell something. That's not enough.
Push a product, a commoditized product. And like, no, we exist for a much higher purpose. And there's something I write about in the book called the purpose statement pyramid, because we have the what we do at the very bottom. And then we have the how we do it. And a lot of organizations and individuals, that's where we stop with the conversation. If we can transcend that just a little bit higher, we can talk about who we do it for, which to me, that's critical. If we can get really targeted and focused of who we're looking to help, that's a transformative exercise. It's a very hard one to have, but it's a transformative one. And then finally, it's the existential of why are we doing this? What is our purpose? Like, what is our higher goal, our higher calling? And that's to get, in my eyes, if we're in financial services, whether on the mortgage side, whether on the deposit side and small business, it's to help people get beyond their questions and concerns, their fears, their frustrations that are holding them back from them achieving a bigger, better, brighter future.
Done, dude. Well, so let's unpack this some more. I know in your book, you talk about this a lot, but defining the customer journey. And you just alluded to it with, you know, understanding what we want to be part of that customer journey. You know, you have the tools, but how are you really there? Maybe break down how you see the customer journey. And I think that'll tie into this really nicely.
So we can actually define that with an acronym. I call it the Banker Strategy Circle. And banker.
I love it, dude. I love acronyms.
B, build an audience with data. It's the very first step. And that's why we need to define who we're looking to help. Once we build an audience with data, we can then attract leads with personalized offers. So we have BA. The nurture part of this, the end of banker, is to nurture those leads with automation and content. So to move them through, help them get beyond those unknowns that are holding them back. Because once we do that, it's like any relationship. I have to know you, I have to like you, I have to trust you. And once someone finally trusts us enough, that's when we can ask for the business. We can, you know, get them to, you know, click the apply button, and that's where we convert them for a loan. But the journey's not over yet, because then we can expand that relationship, the E, by delighting in that experience through some type of an onboarding process. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest untapped opportunities that I see right now in financial services, whether in mortgage or other types of lending or business, it's the R. And that is to repeat the entire process by asking for some type of a rating, some type of a review, and really most importantly, asking for a referral, because that's just going to put someone right back through that entire loop once again.
And I think the fear here, or the problem here, is if you don't go down that journey, if you try to go right to the close, you know, you're gonna off ramp, you're gonna fail the customer, and they're gonna go somewhere else.
Exactly. People have options today. The consumer is in control of the buying journey. That's it.
You know, so tying that into real estate and loans, it's so crazy you said that, because in 2003 when I started, the consumer wasn't necessarily totally in control. Mm-mm. And you know, for those people that are new to our industry and haven't, you know, even though 2003 is not that long ago, people, not that old yet, you know, it was a world that was hidden. The internet hadn't fully come into real estate. You couldn't find houses that were for sale without talking to local professionals. You know, it was kind of a closed environment.
Yeah.
And to your point now, it's blown wide open. The consumer's in full control, and they have more options than ever before, and more education, sometimes misinformation.
Yep.
But than ever before.
It's interesting you make the note of misinformation. And the way that I look at this is almost like a practitioner-patient relationship, because, you know, if you're symptomatic with something, something's ailing you, what do? What's the very first thing you do?
Google.
You go to Google and you Google your symptoms.
And then you realize you're on WebMD, and then you're too deep, and you realize you have 17 diseases.
And you're self-diagnosing. And so even that's not misinformation, that's legitimate information. but I don't have the context nor the expertise to understand how that applies to my unique situation or my reality. So what do I do? I'm like, okay, stop. I call the doctor. I go see the doctor. The doctor then diagnoses me. He runs some tests. And then he says, you know what, this is the problem. Hey, and by the way, here's the prescription. Here's the cure. And the same thing is true in mortgages, in lending.
Yep.
There's a lot of information out there. Yep. And that can be very dangerous for someone. It can be a misdiagnosis. It can send them down the wrong path. It can cause them more pain. Yep. So what do we have to do? Physician-practitioner relationship. We have to guide them through this journey to give them some calm, to give them some clarity, to give them some peace, to give them some hope.
Well, and this is, oh, Bill, thank you, my man. This guy's, if you don't follow Bill Gaylord, you're missing out. This guy's incredible. Good to hang with us, dude. So let's talk about this for a second. In fact, I actually want to go back. I want you to hit banker again. I want you to run it. People missed it. It was too fast, but it's gold. So we got B. Go for it.
Build an audience with data.
Absolutely. Right. So, and by the way, I cannot tell you how many loan professionals today are absolutely blowing a massive opportunity by not putting their customers they're serving into their social sphere. You know, they're relegating them to a CRM if they're doing anything at all. And that's okay. I'm not going to trash that too much, but they're not inviting them into a bigger cultivation opportunity and relationship.
What you're talking about, it's the transformation of community. Community used to be physically defined. Location, zip code, 5 mile radius, three yep. mile radius.
Yep.
Community is now digital. And what we get with digital when building an audience, when building a community, is a multiplying factor, because it's almost like a time machine.
Yes.
To where I can be in multiple locations at once, like we are right now, LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube. But we have to put that type of contextual thinking in how we're looking at just presenting ourselves to the community that we're looking to build.
By the way, so this is a little bit of a side note tangent, but this is what's you're dead on. And here's something that I think that the mortgage industry isn't really prepared for. You know, so in retail mortgage banking, we're used to geography. We're used to how many I can go to open houses that I can drive to, you know, zip codes. I have my office. You know, this is my sphere of influence location. Nope. There's no geography on the internet. I mean, you could be in any market at any time, multiple times. And in fact, like to your point on the power of video in this digital community, someone's going to be watching this like 3 days from now and connecting in to this digital experience and this digital community. That's wild.
Yeah. And think about that. You're building like video. That's why post COVID, you know, I've been doubling down on video. I've been guiding and coaching more around video because it's how we bring humanity to this sphere, the sphere of influence. There's two sides of the equation when we talk about digital growth. There's the DX or the digital experience, but on the flip side, there's the HX. That's the human experience. It's not one, it's not the other. It's about using technology to bring people together for good. And when we look at the digital experience, we can't just look at it holistically. We have to break that down. We have the lead experience, and we treat mm-hmm. those people differently. We have the customer experience. And then, as I mentioned before, one of the biggest blue ocean opportunities, it's the referral experience. And then on the human side, we have two things, help and hope. And to me, a lot of times when it comes to the situations like buying a home, people need hope before they can even be open to help. Can I even do this? Can I even afford this?
I love that. The human side and help and hope is dead on accurate. So I want to hit banker though, because we went,
yep.
Build an audience. That's our B. What's our A?
Attract leads with personalized offers. And let's be very clear, what type of leads are these? These are MQLs, or marketing qualified leads. So they're people who maybe they're a good fit, maybe we might be able to help them. We don't know just yet. Maybe we don't know what stage they're at in this buying journey.
Yep.
But we have to extend an offer.
P, Yep. Yeah, Brian likes that hope for help. That's killer. That's a nugget right there. Okay, so then we got the N.
Nurture leads with automation and content. And so at this stage, we're bringing people into what we would call like a sales qualified prospect.
Yep.
They're moving a little bit further down. And that's why automation, marketing automation to me is an exponential factor. It's and content must be the fuel of this engine that you're running.
So then we got the E.
The C.
I skip C? Yep. See, I jumped ahead and then I ruined the customer experience.
You missed the most important part of it, which is the conversion. We got to convert them for the loan. And I think it's interesting to note at the stage of conversion, a lot of times we look at that is we're going to push them through our digital application.
This is a good point.
But maybe not. Maybe not. I look at three different types of calls to action. There's your primary, click to apply for the loan. But we have found by deploying, this is extremely tactical, but it's a transformative tactic. A secondary call to action right below the apply button. Have a question? We'll call you back. We typically see higher conversions on the secondary call to action. And there it is. It's connecting the digital experience with the human experience because people still have those questions. They think they're ready to apply, but I need just to talk to someone to make me feel good so then I can get pushed over the edge. So the conversion might not necessarily be 100% digital. Digital might just be an assist on that journey. Yep.
All right, now I'm ready for my E.
Expand the relationship by delighting the account through some type of an onboarding process or experience. And once again, there's an opportunity to connect the digital world with the physical world. Gift boxes to me are like a transformative experience because it just adds that little bit of touch that says, you know what? Wow, this is making me feel really good because coming back to those different types of consumer emotions and relationships, I have to know you before I like you. I have to like you before I can trust you. And only once I trust you, finally then in that onboarding, that's where you're really reaffirming the love of the relationship.
Love it, dude. And then obviously we're back at the R, which is to repeat.
Repeat the process by asking for some type of a rating, whether that be on Facebook, Google Places.
Absolutely.
On a specific website, asking for not only the rating, but then getting the review or the review of whatever it might be, and then following that up once more, tying in the referral. And what better way to do that than to apply a system like NPS or Net Promoter, which I've always looked at as a vanity metric. Great, your Net Promoter score is 9.2. I don't care. Turn that insight into action and then get your promoters to actually promote.
Totally. 100%. I like the vanity. It's so true. I want to talk about the narcissistic marketing in a minute because that before I forget, it's incredible. But let's talk about maximizing technology. You know, we're in a digital age. What, you know, how do we build technology? How do we leverage technology in our growth strategy?
The way that I'm going to look at this is through building what I call a digital growth engine. And when we look at the marketing and sales technology available to a lender, to an organization, it's just, it's insane. We've gone, what was it, the MarTech, like 10,000 now.
Yeah.
So let's just distill this down. What are the four key pieces or the four gears that are needed to make this engine run? The very first is going to be some type of ad targeting, email targeting system, marketing automation at the front end. That's then going to drive leads to a website that sells. Not a glorified online brochure, which I see so many mistakes being made with that. It's like, you know, here's all of our products and here's all the bullet points that get tied into that. No. We need to actually help first and sell second. Then we're going to take those leads that are coming through our website that sells, and then we're going to put them into the marketing automation, use content to nurture those leads. And then ultimately, once we convert them, we have some type of sales and service platform, i.e. CRM. That we can expand that relationship. But here's the thing. Those are the four gears. What is needed for an engine to run?
Gas.
Fuel.
Yeah.
So if you look at each one of those gears, we need fuel to turn the gears. That fuel is going to be content. So content is the fuel of the digital growth engine. And now we take that to the next level. So our engine's running great. If you want it to run even more efficiently, data is now the oil of the engine.
But let's talk about the fuel, because, and this is a, maybe a little bit of a tangent, but it's important.
Yep.
I talk to a lot of people whose main sticking point, I'm going to say excuse, I'm a little harsher, is they feel like they have a lack of content.
Hmm.
They don't know what to say. And so how do you address that? How do you coach through that? How do you take organizations through that?
It's, first and foremost, the content's not about you. So let's come back to what I was
Sorry. That's just, let's unpack that. That's totally right. But I see a lot of people whose content is about them, but go on.
Yeah. Cause I think that's hard. Cause it's like, well, what am I going to say? What am I going to say about myself? So there's like a mental block already, kind of tied to that. So let's come back to purpose. And one of the things I talked about in purpose was defining the who are you looking to help? So now we need to identify personas. What are their questions? What are their concerns? What are their hopes? What are their dreams? What are their fears? What are their frustrations? Lean into the pain that people have. Like if you can like start unpacking that, that's where the gold is. Yep. Because now that gives me specific problems that I can solve. Coming back to the physician-practitioner relationship. Now I can start using my content as potential cures to these pain points of these personas or of these people that I'm looking to help.
See, let's open up the topic about narcissistic marketing, because you've clearly defined in that quick, hit what we should be focusing our content on. Who do you want to serve? What are the problems that you can address? Go into that space. And yep. Yet we see tons of narcissistic marketing, which, it's a term I stole that from your book because you showed it to me earlier. But and I'll give a silly example. Loan officer does a great job, gets a great review. Post it on their social feed. Look at this great review. Look how great I am. Or loan officer does a great job, closes the loan very quickly. Very proud of that. And they post record closing in, 6 days.
Yep.
Look how good I am.
Yep.
And so what? How did you define and come up with narcissistic marketing as a topic? And what does it mean?
Well, a lot of it comes from just observation.
Yeah.
I like to think of myself as maybe a digital anthropologist and just studying human behavior digitally. So narcissistic marketing, maybe it's rooted in just our flawed human nature to where we try to make everything about us. That's been amplified more, I think, than ever before because of things like social media.
Yep.
So social media, it's like a double-edged sword. It's not good. It's not bad. It just kind of brings out the individual of a person at their core. It amplifies that. So narcissistic marketing is where an organization, a loan officer even, has a solution to a mass market that might be called to action. And so it's very broad. Mm-hmm. And when we look at that type of a narrative structure, an organization or a loan officer might have a solution for a mass market that might be called to action. Who's the hero? Who is that narrative about?
That's it. When it's about yourself.
It's yourself. But here's the thing. Shout out to Miss Bungo. Shout out to Miss Spradley. They were my 9th and 10th grade literature teachers. Never thought that what I learned back then would be practical today. When you go back to basic literary structure, there can only be two types of heroes in a narrative. Your protagonist and your antagonist. And the consumer, and the stories that I'm telling myself and having, the conversations I'm having with myself in my head, I'm the hero. And so enter the other hero. They're already coming into the narrative. If it's about them, they're the anti-hero. They're the antagonist. So we're all, if we're using a narcissistic marketing like model, we're already have been defeated before we have even had a chance to quote unquote win the battle. but why are we trying to win battles? It's a lose-lose proposition. So let's reframe this and take on another role, an even more helpful role in this type of a narrative structure. Coming back to literary history, I think Joseph Campbell made everyone's work in this so simplified when he wrote the A Hero with a Thousand Faces, and he kind of looked at all the literary history going back to the earliest stories of like Gilgamesh and whatnot. We have another role, and that is enter the helpful guide. That is the Obi-Wan Kenobi. That is the Mr. Miyagi. That's the Yoda. Because without a helpful guide, there can be no hero. And without a hero, there is no story. That's it. Be the helpful guide.
And it's so hard. You know, by the way, I hear that. I had a great pod with Dave Savage, and that theme came through again. But, you know, in practical terms, it can be hard to be in that frame of the state of mind.
So let's make it practical. And that's where we apply the story selling methodology. And the story selling, because here's the thing. Everyone's talking about, yeah, you need to tell a better story. You know, I would go to conferences. I'd be speaking at conferences. I'd hear another speaker and tell the audience, you need to tell a better story. What the hell does that even mean? Like, I get angry. So I spent like 3 years like trying to figure this out. And really kind of going back to like ninth grade in my head and then in my reading. Story selling, coming back, tie it all together.
Yep.
A consumer persona has specific questions and concerns who meets a helpful and empathetic guide. And here's the key. This is the crux. That must first build trust with content. Because when you go back and you watch Star Wars, Luke, when he was introduced to Obi-Wan, who's this old man?
Yep.
Every guide has to build trust before the hero will follow them or take the guide's advice. And the way that we do that digitally, the way we build trust digitally, comes back to what we were just talking about.
Yep.
It's content.
Yeah, you got to show up. Got to show up. And there's a lot of people not showing up.
Exactly. But the journey doesn't end there in the story selling methodology. So now the guide has built the trust. What has to happen next? The guide has to call the hero to take some type of action. So I do see there's a gap. There's a lot of people who are pumping out lots of good content, but they never come back and ask, can I help you? Can I take you to that bigger, better, brighter future?
So I got to tell a story on this one, and James Robert, I think you'll appreciate it. I posted a mini comment on this earlier, but in my early days of Origination, I was busting tail. Like, I had the top 100 realtors in my market getting a monthly drip. I was going to every single open house and broker preview and board event and networking event. And I was everywhere. I used to get people used to say, like, dude, you are everywhere, right? Everywhere you go. I'm seeing a flyer from you. I'm seeing you. But I couldn't ask for business. I had a fear of rejection that would happen from this. And so I built great rapport and I ended up getting business because I built relationships. But what happened one day was I decided to ask, and I was going to get married the next month. And so I wanted to fund over $10 million because that was a big number, still a big number.
Yep.
And I was like, I'd never broken that metric. And I was like, I really want to hit this as a personal goal. And I sent out a stupid piece of paper with me on it that said the $10 million challenge. And I mailed it out to all the agents, mailed it out to all my customers that I'd done business with. And I've only done this is my first year doing business. So it's not a lot of customers, but you know, I got $13 million of business that month because I asked.
Yeah.
But I didn't just ask. I had been busting my ass literally to make connection with everybody. And it's the 1-2 punch. Exactly what you're saying.
You have to make the connection before you can ask for the business. And that takes time.
Yep.
And here's the thing. Digital growth is a journey.
Yes.
It is a journey from good to great. It is a journey that begins in the mind. And it takes time. It's not like... Digital has also, it's shortened our patience.
Yes.
It's like we want it now.
And we can get stuff we get instant gratification all the time, kind of. So
we do. We get dopamine hits like all the time.
I was like, I made a video. Where's my all my business?
You said something though that was key, and I wrote this down about the ask, the fear of rejection. Because here's the thing, it's really a two-sided equation of the ask. Because now, if you come back to the banker strategy circle, you got to ask for the business to convert someone. But then if you want to repeat that process, you have to ask for the rating, the review, the referral. And I see fear holding a lot of people back on this journey. I've never considered the fear of rejection, though. That's a really good one, because what I write about in the book, the four fears that hold someone back, whether they're a mortgage officer, an executive team, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's first and foremost, it's the fear of the unknown. We as human beings love the cave of complacency, the cave of comfort. It's safe, it's secure, it's not dangerous.
That's right. But
complacency in this digital world of exponential change, it's killer. It's going to be the downfall of a lot of people who, like, here's the thing. A lot of people up to this point, I'm so glad the narrative is finally changing about like education and the way that we learn, the way our kids learn. AQ, adaptability quotient, and EQ, emotional intelligence, in this digital world far outweighs IQ. I was just talking with someone in the fintech space. I'm like, yeah, you got a lot of people in fintech. They're like super, super smart, but their EQ is like zilch. And that's why there's a lot of challenges, you know, bringing fintech into the marketplace, because we got the smartest people in the room. We got the IQ, but we don't have the EQ. AQ and EQ. So we got the fear of the unknown. The other thing too that I see is the fear of change, like coming out of the cave of complacency.
Yep.
We don't like that change. Then we have the fear of failure. What happens if I try this and it doesn't work? What happens if you don't? Like there's like, play worst case scenario with this.
Yeah.
Because what got you to where you're at today won't get you to where you need to go tomorrow, which then brings me to the last fear, and it's the fear of success. Like, holy shit, what if this does work?
Yeah, then what?
Then what? Can I even sustain something like this? But fear of rejection, that's a great one. I appreciate that, putting that on my radar.
Well, so let's circle back to digital stories. I think that you nailed some key points there, and I want to just kind of hammer on it before we move on, because it was really well said. You know, the fact is we have to get out of our own way and be a guide, or else we're immediately battling heroes with the customer we're trying to serve.
Yeah.
You know, it's just all of a sudden, you know, you're dead before you even start. I loved hearing that. And then you get trust, you gain trust by content, by showing up, by being present, by being with them in the struggle. And that to me lays out a wonderful opportunity to tell stories in that narrative tone. And the more we're reminded of that, the more we implant that in our brains, the more we can filter our marketing through that lens, you know, we get away from the narcissistic marketing.
Yes.
And we turn into true guides and true value added people. And I want to say one more thing too, that triggered me on this. You know, for everybody paying attention now or later joining this conversation, you got to get really, James Roberts said it earlier, you got to get really focused on why you do what you do. Because all content comes through that, and the ability to break through fear comes through that. If you get really focused on why you're doing what you're doing, you'll turn the camera on. You'll start telling stories. But you got to be really grounded in that. If it's just another loan, if you're doing it for money, you know, all those things will come through your stories, and they won't land.
I want to address that, because if we come back and look at ancient wisdom, you know, there's an old saying, where there's no purpose, where there's no vision, the people perish. A really good book. And a lot of people, Think and Grow Rich. But what they don't know from, and what was the author's name on that?
Napoleon Hill?
Napoleon Hill, Napoleon Hill. What they don't know is another book that I highly recommend people read, especially now with everything that's going on in this crazy like millennium of 2020. It's called Outwitting the Devil. And it is a book literally framed around fear and overcoming fear. And Napoleon Hill puts the devil on trial and gets the devil to confess all of his secrets. And one of the things that Napoleon Hill writes about, and you're talking to specifically, is the definitiveness of purpose. Once we lock that in, everything else becomes crystal clear. And I think a lot of people right now, with all of this exponential change, environmental change, changing in consumer behavior, we get stuck in the circle of chaos where we're confused, we're frustrated, we're overwhelmed. Hey, I get it. And I got a lot of empathy for that. But the only way to escape that circle of chaos is step number one. You got to gain some clarity into what the future opportunities are in the first place, because that clarity helps to come tying it all back. It helps to overcome the fear of the unknown. And one of the best ways to do that is just to define a purpose beyond the product. Put transformations of people over the transaction.
So let's get practical. How do you do that?
In regards to, that's a bit, because we just unpacked a lot. Let's decide. How do we do? Be more pointed. How do we do what?
How do we get out of the circle of chaos?
Four steps. Gain clarity. Become a lifelong learner. Things are happening and changing way too fast. We already talked about like the transformation of education. There's no reason, and what you're doing, it's so valuable. You're teaching. Be the student, but also be the teacher. You know, it's both sides, and it's like this upward spiral. Everyone wins. The tide rises together. So gaining clarity, be a lifelong learner, be a student. And if you don't know something, Google it, YouTube it.
Well, and Jay Driver, I got to add on this, because one of my favorite sayings is be a student of your own experience. And I think that the ability for someone to objectively step back, look at what they did, look at the content they make, look at the experiences they're having, and go, do I like this? Is it going the right way? What am I learning from this? What can I learn from this? Is an absolute like skyrocket cheat hack to like push yourself forward.
So let's talk about that. We have to, as an individual, a team, an organization, a society, a culture, redefine failure. And that to me is one of the biggest flawed things out of the public school system is, you know, I have four kids and I'm really trying to just let them learn and learn through experience, learn through failure, because up to the time that you go into that grade school, you don't know really what it's like to fail, because it's all about play. It's about experimentation. It's about learning. But then you're getting these grades and wow, like, oh no, I got a C, or oh no, I got a D.
Yep. And this wrong person got whatever they got, an A. And so they're better than me.
Exactly. Wrong. It's what, you know, failure is nothing more than the best learning mechanism in life. I look at failure as the fertile soil from which new growth springs from. And if we can be okay with that and really dig deep and do a lot of like self-assessment, self-awareness, I think failure is that's a big, big thing when it comes to just gaining clarity into what opportunities are. What can I do and make it even better?
Well, you know what? Everyone makes everything like a final exam. And so it's like, guys, no, this is practice. All of this is practice until we die. Like, yeah, it's just practice. Like every video, every piece of content, every article you write, every tweet, everything you're trying to impact on your business, it's just practice.
I love that. It's practice. And like, let's break down the final exam, if you will, because, you know, we all work in annual cycles and we have these goals that we set. Break it down. let's look at the 90-day year. There's a book actually by that title, to where it's not so big, it's not so overwhelming. And this is a model and a methodology that I teach when it comes to growth, another acronym. What are our goals that we're looking to achieve? And I learned this trick from Dan Sullivan. You know, when we look out towards the future, you know, it's very hard to gain a sense of clarity of what that looks like. So we have to literally put ourselves 2 years ahead or 3 years ahead or 1 year ahead. So Dan Sullivan, he asked the question, if you and I were having a conversation 3 years from now and we're looking back, what has to happen between now until then for you to feel good about the progress that you're making on your own journey? And that's how you get clear about the future state that you're wanting to create for yourself, for your team, for your organization, for the people you're looking to help. Then you can follow that up. So that's G. Then you can follow that up with R. What are the roadblocks and challenges that I must eliminate because they stand in my way?
Yep.
Get very clear about that. Put them on a piece of paper. Continuing forward, what are the greatest opportunities available now for me to create or capture? And maybe it is, you know what? I have to commit to creating one piece of video content per week and just getting it out there. I think of video, we're going to come back to that. I was working with a roundtable, about 30 CEOs of financial brands, and the fear, the sheer terror that I heard from them, is that's what's holding them back. Yep. And I said, here, this is what you can do. You get three takes. You get three takes to do a video. Take number three, whatever it is, push it. Just go with it. Lean into the fear and make it happen. And I said, and then as a bonus, maybe take a shot of scotch or whiskey, take the edge off. And I think something else that sometimes helps a person get over the fear of video, it's like we get that eye, that single eye staring back at us, mm-hmm. with the camera. That can be intimidating. So what do we do? Get someone to stand on the other side of the camera and just talk to them. And that's how it's like anything. You'll disconnect from them, you know, after say you do this for a month. Okay, well then I can just use a tripod or yep. a selfie stick. So there's ways that you can like coach yourself through some of this. On this journey that you might take. So goals, roadblocks, opportunities. How do you want to grow?
So James Robert, you obviously go buy this guy's book. If you're looking to hear all this wisdom pouring out of him, just go buy the book. It's all there. But I always like to wrap down with kind of this conversation, this question. Put yourself in the seat. You know, you're sitting down in front of a brand new loan officer to the industry and a 30-year veteran. So you got super experienced and you got brand new, and they're sitting down in front of you. And they say, what do I do? You know, what would you tell me to do given all this landscape, all this world, you know, and how do you lean into them? And what do you say?
Collaborate.
That's a great angle.
Collaborate, because you got 30 years of experience. And then you also have someone who is younger, has kind of grown up in this digital world. Why don't we collaborate our capabilities? Because I think that's a lot of times what we lack is capability. And if we can bring capabilities together, whether that be experience and expertise or being able to navigate the complexities of digital, to me, it's a collaboration opportunity. All, you know, raise the tide together.
You know, I love that so much because two quick stories. You know, when I started in origination, I didn't know a thing. I didn't know what I was doing. I had a great mentor, but you know, I kind of got my feet wet, and then I realized, hey, wait a minute, there's some really successful people out there that originate loans, and they're all on these lists, and I can see them, and they're right here. And you know, we had this thing called a phone in 2003. It was an Nokia brick, but it still could call people.
Yep.
And I called them, and I sent them emails, and I said, hey, I'm new. You know, we're at the same company, so I felt like you know, I work with you, and can I buy you a coffee? Because I'm trying to learn how to be a really damn good originator. Every single one said yes. And every single one sat down and gave me their entire playbook. No insecurity, no fear, just here. And the reality is collaboration, like the reason that I'm gotten better, in my opinion, at this digital world is because I've been staring at people who are doing great things and learning. And then guess what? Can you teach me? Can you help me? How do you do this? And they go, I do it like this. And I go, holy shit. Thank you. Yeah. You know, collaboration is, especially in a digital age when we're so we can feel so disconnected because we can't go get coffee with somebody. Mm. But you know what? You can still connect and collaborate. And that's an incredible message.
But I want to address what holds the collaboration back.
Oh,
I like competition. That. Here's, we have to make some choices, like now, as an individual. I'm either going to approach this world with a growth mindset, mm-hmm. and there's way more opportunities available for us to create together, and that's just going to eliminate the competition. Or I'm going to approach this with a fixed mindset, and there's some type of a fixed number that we can go out and we can fight for, and we can compete against one another. Collaboration to me is the answer because it's the learning opportunity. I mean, think of it this way, like what we're doing right now. You get a 30-year veteran and a new up-and-coming person, co-create a podcast together, co-create something. Collaborate, and you're going to get an exponential factor instead of trying to do this on your own by yourself.
James Robert, I appreciate you, man. I appreciate your advice today. You dropped so many nuggets. I cannot wait to reshare this and cut some parts out and get it back to the world today. Any final words before we wrap down and say goodbye to everybody?
Be well and do good.
Be well and do good.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
Have a wonderful day, everybody. Thank you for tuning in on this episode of the Modern Lending Podcast. If you liked it, share, comment, repeat. Love you guys. Take care.